My name is Ralph White. I'm an alcoholic. I want to thank the group for a couple of things. One, for asking me to come out and share this evening. And secondly, for the warm reception. When I was a kid, one of my games, I'm a sports fanatic. But baseball, you know, was really, really my game. And when I was a kid, this is just going to miss a few people, probably most of the women in here. Don't mean it to be sexist, but, you know, and some of the guys. But for guys, if you ever played Little League or when you played ball, I used to think, why is it that the curveball or changeup is so hard? I used to think, why do major leaguers want them throwing hard? And it seemed like, you know, that would be the hardest pitch hit is a fastball, you know, and I didn't understand that. And then you start playing ball and you start realizing that when the pitcher it provides a lot of the energy, then you don't have to provide it all. And the reason I like coming to this group, and believe it or not, when you get up and you start sharing, it means a lot of people still raise their hands for 90 days. And you look at this deal and you think, wow, this guy is up here and he's by himself and he should really be nervous. But it's really a participatory deal. And I like coming to a group like this one because I don't have to provide all the energy. You know, believe it or not, when in communication, it's pitchers and it's receivers. In communication, that's one of the dynamics in communication. And one of the things that you don't realize is when that takes place, when you got a receptive group, a group that's really doing their part, it's kind of like makes the deal a whole lot easier. And so I really appreciate coming to a group like this. Last time I was out here, I came out here and Bill Sanders was the speaker. And Bill is a guy that I appreciate for keeping the light on for me. And I really enjoyed the energy in the room. And you can feel it. It's a real thing. You know, and for people that's new to Alcoholics Anonymous, to our new friends in Alcoholics Anonymous, you're signing up for something that you don't even know what's going on. You know, if you're new and you're showing up, I say it all the time, we know a couple of things about you. First thing we know, you didn't have a good year. You know, for those of you that's here, we know you ain't been having, you know. And unlike a lot of speakers, I'm going to share something else with you. It ain't going to be all right. If I keep going the way I'm going on my own, it ain't going to be all right. You know, a guy, Roland Hazard, many years ago, before our founders, you know, Roland Hazard was a guy, his people had some money, and he was one of us. And he was trying everything he could to get sober, right? So he went to one of the top doctors of the day. He went and saw Dr. Young. And he went to see Dr. Carl Jung, and he went overseas because his people had some papers, so they sent him overseas. And he studied with the doctor for a year. Studied with him for a year. And the doctor was working with him, doing his psycho thing, you know. I don't know if it was psychoanalysis or psycho, you know, whatever it was he was doing with him. And at the end of that year, he sent Roland back to the States. And Roland just knew, I got this. You know, I got it. And, you know, I've been treated by one of the top shrinks in the world, one of the most world-renowned guys, you know. And he said, I got this. And before Roland got off the water, Roland was drunk. Went back to Young. Dude, I gave you all this money. What's up with this? You know, I know, you know, talk to me. Tell me the truth. And Young said, I'm going to tell you the truth. I got some bad news for you. You know, the methods I'm playing. He said, I tripped. You know, he said, I tripped. I misdiagnosed you. You know, I thought you had, you know, some of the stuff that people get that looks a lot like what we suffer from. You know, I thought you had chronic depression, or I thought you were, you know, bipolar, whatever it is that he thought he was, he told him, you know, he said, but I tripped. You this other group, you're a real alcoholic. And the methods I employed with you have never been successful. You know, and then he said, well, doctor, holler at me. Is it anything that I can do? Because this is killing me. He said, dude, I'm sorry, but I ain't got nothing for you. I spent all this money with you, and you going to come up with, really? You know, and so Roland is like, dude, you got anything for me? Young said, check this out. Every now and then, every once in a while, I've seen guys like you recover. You know, he called it a vital, there have been these vital spiritual experiences, displacements and rearrangements. He said, I've been trying to put that in you, but I can't put it in you. You know, he said, every now and then. And so do our new friends. So what happened from the day Roland Hazard went to see Dr. Young? Something happened with our two co-founders when they got together. And what happened when they got together is what gives us the good news that holds us together tonight. That every now and then phenomenon, that every once in a while thing, something happened that Dr. Bob Smith and Bill Wilson, when armed with the information that they got with Dr. Silkworth, you know, there was something that happened when those two drunks, not a shrink and a drunk, not even a doctor and a drunk, when those two drunks got together, there was an alchemy that came. And for some reason, in Alcoholics Anonymous, when we've been able to replicate the spiritual experience. We've been able to replicate. And that's why when Bill describes it, because it's a miraculous occurrence, when it's every now and then, that's what the definition of a miracle is. It don't happen every day. It ain't a miracle if it's happening every day. That's just okay. This is all. It might be out of the ordinary and it might be extraordinary. It ain't a miracle when you see it every day. So what Bill describes and what happens to people like us, you know, that fills up a room like this, he calls it a wholesale miracle. A wholesale miracle. This replication of the spiritual. So to our new friends, that's the good news. Stumbled into something, you know, and I like to talk about the good news. I like to talk about this thing we have. I like to talk about what happened to me. I come from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. I come from walking the streets at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. You know, that's what I do on Friday night and on Saturday night. And if you're sitting in this room right now, you may not be so new. You might be in your first 9. You might be in 6 months. You might be in 9 months. And you might be thinking to yourself, when is my ship going to come in? When is this miracle dude is talking about? When is it going to happen for me? This spiritual experience that he's talking about. Check this out. If you're sitting in this room on a Saturday night and you can take anything green out of your pocket right now, you're sitting in the middle of the spiritual experience. Sitting dead in the middle of the spiritual experience. And Christina moved, but I so enjoyed her story. You know, we tell our stories because, you know, we're different. We're not a monolithic group that all drank the same, talked the same, thought the same. You know, her background way different from mine. You know, and but we in this room right now, but we both had that thing. You know, she had one, you know, she talked about being one of two, you know, I'm one of six. We stayed in a little 2-bedroom apartment. Moms and pops in one room. The 6 boys stayed in 3 bunk beds in another room. And the earliest memory of my old man was he was an alcoholic, and I didn't want to be like him. My father wasn't abusive, and he wasn't violent. He was an absentee drunk. You know, I knew every other Friday he would not show up with a check, you know. Pops got put out the house when I was 9 or 10 years old, and my mother proceeded to raise these 6 boys by herself. You know, don't know about the rest of you guys. I always talk about it. Ideal family life when I was a kid, we took it from the TV programs of the day, and the TV programs that showed ideal family life when I was growing up, Ozzie and Harriet, Father Knows Best, Leave It to Beaver, My 3 Sons, Donna Reed, wasn't jumping off in my house. When you grow, you get something that's called perspective, and perspective works like this. You got a mom that raised these 6 boys by herself. Back in the 60s, my mother was on welfare. Old Southern Baptist sister who had made her way to Los Angeles, California back in the late 40s. And my mom in the 60s was on welfare with these 6 sons. And my mom proceeded, she didn't settle for a lot, and she put herself back through high school, and she put herself through college, and she worked 2 jobs, and she took in clothes that she washed and ironed for other folk. And when you grown, you look back on your life and say, damn, I had a hell of a mom. Look how she sacrificed to raise her boys. But when you're a kid about 9 or 10 years old, and you come home from school on a Wednesday afternoon with a couple of your buddies, and you hit the front door, and mom's is in the living room with an ironing board up and a rag on her head, you don't feel proud. You feel ashamed and embarrassed. And you start bringing partners home from school. And if your name is Ralph, you live in the prison. I've lived there much of my life, and that's the prison of what I think you think about me. See, I don't know what you think about me, but I'm trapped in what I think you think about me. And I will do whatever it takes to shape and form and mold your opinion around. I'll whine you, I'll dine you, I'll woo you, I'll con you, I'll bully you, I'll manipulate you, I'll buy you. Please like me. Now, I don't particularly have to like your ass, but please like me. So I'm growing up like that, man, and I'm growing up in South Central, you know. And my story, you know, is one. My story go a little. I never knew the word dysfunctional until I hit the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I imagine outwardly my family life might have looked like it had some of the earmarks of that. You know, because we didn't have no money and we didn't grow up with a lot. But I'm the kind of kid that used to go to sleep on Christmas Eve with all his clothes on because I couldn't wait for Christmas Day to come. Now, moms might only have $40 or $50 as a budget for these six boys. So, you know, we wasn't getting a lot. Chinese checkers, dominoes, Monopoly. I might get a glove. But on Christmas morning at the White House, it would be smells in the house. And it would be cooking. And the boys would get up and open up the gifts that they dig. And we'd play together. And family would come over. And it would be singing. And it would be fun. And it was a lot of love in my house. I didn't know nothing about this. My old man got put out pretty early. And I didn't see, although I felt the effects of alcoholism, I didn't see active alcoholism for most of my life growing up. Pops got put out pretty early, and he drank away from home when he was in the house. You know, so I don't, you know, so that whole story about the dysfunction, so, you know, that's not my deal. You know, I'm a kid, so I share it all the time because different people think it's my circumstance. You know, it's my circumstance that made me an alcoholic, you know, and I'm here to share with you tonight that, you know, I'm not an alcoholic, you know, because my old man drank. Somebody in here tonight grew up with parents that never took it, you know, never touched alcohol. I don't think I'm an alcoholic because I'm a product of a broken home. Somebody in here grew up with both parents in the house. I'm not an alcoholic because I'm a poor kid from the ghetto. Look around the room. You know that ain't the reason. I'm not an alcoholic because we didn't have no money. Somebody in this room probably grew up with a silver spoon. You know, I'm not an alcoholic because I'm a little guy. Some big guys up in here tonight. I'm an alcoholic for two reasons and two reasons only. One, when I take one, I can't tell you when I'm going to stop. Two, when I sincerely don't want to put it in me and start it up again, I put it in me and start it up again anyway. I'm bodily and mentally different. That's it. That's all. Rest is my story. And my story goes a little bit like this. Every single one of you had me in your classroom. I was used to be class president or student body president. I was a straight-A student. I was teacher's pet. I played ball. I made all-stars. On the outside, it should have been okay. On the inside, I've always felt like if you really knew me, you wouldn't like me. Yeah, I was teacher's pet. Yeah, I was straight-A student. Would have traded it all in if it could have been cool. If I just could have been cool, you know, because in my neighborhood, it was a whole lot more currency placed on cool than on smart. There's some cool guys sitting in here right now. You know, I see you the ones, you were the ones in the bathroom, smoking cigarettes, shooting dice, taking quarters from guys like me that brought extra quarters with them, and you knew how to talk to girls. Girls were a mystery to me. I didn't get the manual. I didn't get the handbook. Cats were standing around talking about throwing down with girls 13 years old, you know. I know you guys were lying, but I would be thinking to myself, how come I don't know, you know. It took me a while to get comfortable telling my story in Alcoholics Anonymous. This is the first place I ever landed. Folk try to out-bottom each other, you know, and I wanted a penitentiary story without visiting the pen to get it, and, you know, but my story's my story, and I'm not willing to go get another one. I'm a square, I'm a shy guy, I'm scared of girls, I'm 16 years old, and I ain't touched nothing. Late in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? Get a girlfriend at 16. Ralph with a girlfriend don't mean at 16 don't mean the same thing it means for some of you cats. Ralph with a girlfriend at 16 simply means this. Ran with a crew of dudes, one with the same group of girls. One of my boys broke up with this girl, waited a little time to pass, told my other boy I want to go with her. He went and asked her, came back and told me. She said, yeah, now I got a girlfriend. I'd had other girlfriends before, but this one actually knew she was my girlfriend, right? So out on a double date, me and my girl in the back seat, older partner, him and his girl in the front seat, he driving. Plastic cup of rum and coke come to the back seat this particular night, drank it down, went down real warm, rushed back to the top of my brain. All of a sudden, Ralph's hands started doing things they had never done. Mouth started saying things that it never said. I'd arrived. Alcohol did for me what I couldn't do for myself. Gave me the courage to do and to say and to be things I wouldn't do, be and say without it. And I liked it. I liked it a lot. Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous talks about me in lots of places. It starts talking about me in the front of our book. New Friends, we have a chapter called The Doctor's Opinion. And there's a line in The Doctor's Opinion jumped out at me first time I read it. Men and women like me drink essentially for the effect produced by alcohol. Recognize that first time I read it. I understand I'm not overnight alcoholic, though. I understand we talk about this disease being progressive in nature, because that's how it showed up in my experience. I've heard a lot of people share from podiums like this. I have a lot of friends in Alcoholics Anonymous, and so there are as many different experiences as there are alcoholics. I know many people who say when they took that first drink, it was love at first drink. It was transcendent. I made a commitment. I'm going to be drinking for the rest of my life. Wasn't like that for me. I took that first drink. It was all right. I got a warm, tipsy feeling. I kissed and licked and sucked on my plate, girl in places I had never done before. You know, and that's how my drinking stayed. I would drink to go out on the weekends and party. I graduated from high school in 71, and I graduated to higher education in every sense of the word. 71, I'm drinking on the weekends to go to parties. By the end of 71, I'm drinking not only the night of the party, but I'm drinking during the day to get ready for the party that night. By 1972, I'm drinking not only during the weekends, but now I'm drinking during the week after class, and I've added some non-addictive marijuana to the mix. By the end of 72, I'm drinking and I'm smoking herb and I'm selling herb. By 1973, I'm drinking, I'm smoking herb, I'm selling herb, I'm doing other drugs, I'm doing it on a daily basis, and you couldn't have told me it was anything wrong with the way I was living. The Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous talks about it. At a certain point in my drinking career, I won't be able to tell the truth from the false. And the way that works for me is this. Isn't the way that I'm doing it? Isn't that the way everybody does it? Why would you be young with a bright future, with a little bit of money, then chasing women and getting loaded, come with the territory? In those days, man, if you came over to my house and I couldn't offer you something to drink or something to smoke, I wasn't being a good host. And if I went over your house and you didn't do the same for me, not only weren't you being a good host, wasn't coming over your house no more. You know, for what? Now I'm nothing to talk about. You know, and no disrespect to our young friends. I don't mean new friends. Young friends. I'm glad I grew up in the year I grew up. I'm glad I grew up in the time I grew up. I came up in the late 60s, early 70s. I see some vets up in here that's about my age. You know, and those were the days, man. Remember, you could go to concerts. You didn't even have to know your neighbor. You just passed and stuff. In 2018, you know, it's some crazy stuff. Now, the 60s and the 70s was a crazy time in this country. It was a turbulent time, but in some ways it seemed like a simpler time. 2018, you got to practice safe sex. You got deadly sexually transmitted disease. Man, back in those days, I'd go to a club, I'd have a one-question interview for a girl. You get high? If not, next. I don't want to know your last name. I don't need to know your sign. I don't need to know your mommy. Let's get to the basis of this relationship. Are you getting down like I'm getting down? And that's just the way that it was, you know. And so I'm partying, and I'm a youngster, and I'm in the life, you know. And you couldn't have told me. You know, I came around the program four times before I came to say, let me get this out there. There are some thin lines in Alcoholics Anonymous. And one of the thinnest lines that makes most of the difference, there's a thin line between comparing and identifying. My early efforts at doing this thing, I would always compare, and I'd never identify. And I couldn't find myself in the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous, and I couldn't find myself in any of you guys' stories. I would read the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous. First thing I do, I read Bill's story. Bill is an older white guy. Okay, we ain't got that in common. You know, Bill was a veteran of foreign wars, Vietnam-era draft dodger. You know, Bill was a Wall Street stockbroker. Check out the way I handle money. You know we ain't got that in common. You know, if you read Bill's story, Bill dropped a line like this. He said, there have been no real infidelity. Miss me on that one, too. You know, so I would always, you know, I'd find all the differences. You know, and when I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous to stay, Somebody taught me how to read the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous. And they said, Ralph, the same way that you read the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous is the same way that you listen to our members share their stories at the meeting. When you read the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous and when you listen to our members share their experience, strength, and hope, ask yourself three or four questions. Ask yourself, did I drink like he drank? Did I think like he thought? Did I feel like he felt? Or did I do what he did? And when I read Bill's story in the light of those questions, I found my story. I'm at this major university, and just like Bill, the drive for success was on. I proved to the world I was important. Just like him, drink started taking a more important and exhilarating part in my life. He said something strange. Bill wrote in his story, out of this alloy of drink and speculation, out of this combination of his thinking and his drinking, he would later forge a weapon that would turn on him like a boomerang and almost cut him to ribbons. I don't talk like that. You know, where I come from, they had a shortcut version. They used to say, trouble always starts out like fun. And you couldn't have told me when I'm in the dorms drinking that Yago, drinking that Annie Green Springs, drinking that Boone's Farm, drinking that Tyrolia, drinking that Spinata, drinking that Brass Monkey. You know what drugs are. You couldn't have told me when I'm up in the dorms alcohol was going to have its way with me. But it did what it is that it does, and it had its way with your boy. I stumbled up out of that school some kind of way. I started working as a counselor for L.A. City Schools. Although I had the kind of job that should have allowed me to acquire what normal people acquired, I never did that. Snapshot of Ralph's life, this is when alcohol was working. I buy a car, I make exactly 3 car payments, then come find it. Come find it. First time I had a car repossessed, I had the nerve to call LAPD. 9 months behind on the note. Next 2 times, I didn't even trip. I already knew. You know, I got real adept at parking my car all over the place. Right? I'm the kind of brother never had a problem balancing a bank book. Payday, I got money. 2 days later, broke. 0. No problem balancing my bank book. You know. Stayed in the crib from 1976 to 1979 without paying rent. A couple of baffling features about the disease I suffer from, one of them is this. I can't see my relationship with alcohol until I'm free of it. I can't see what it's doing to me when I'm in the mix. So some of the things that are crystal clear to me now looking back in the rearview mirror of experience were not at all clear to me when I was going through them. One fact stands out real clear to me about the days I thought alcohol was working. I used to go to work for 2 weeks to live for 2 days. I said, that's all. Can't tell you the day or the time or the hour. Can't tell you where I was or what I was doing when alcohol ceased to be a luxury for me and became a necessity. I can tell you that looking back, it happened. You know, a cold thing about the disease I suffer from, somebody probably know. You know what I don't like about it? It's invisible. You know, that invisible line they talk about, it's invisible. There ain't nothing that says, if you take that next one, you enter in the region from which there's no return. No, you know, and if you like me, by the time you realize it's a line, you way over here. And put that line right there, you know, way over. The cold thing, you know, a couple of cold things about the disease I suffer from. This is the coldest. By the time I realize I have a problem and need to do something about it, it's already too late for me to do something about it. Damn. Anybody else play the regret game in Alcoholics Anonymous? It's a few people nodding. The regret game in Alcoholics Anonymous goes something like this. If I only knew then what I know now, I never would have took me here right, you know. Remind me of a story I like to tell about a little boy named Johnny. Johnny had a habit his father frowned on. Johnny used to like to play with himself. Father goes to work one day, comes home early. Little Johnny's bedroom door is closed. Father opens the door without knocking. Sure enough, little Johnny's in the bedroom masturbating. Father says, son, I thought I told you if you keep doing that, you'll go blind. Little Johnny stopped and looked at his daddy and said, well, daddy, can I just do it till I need glasses? You know what I'm saying? I like that story because that story reminds me of me and the light. I see you going down, you going down, you going down. I'm just going to do it till I need glass. And the book talks about seeking the Lord companion. It wasn't long before I became the Lord companion. We ain't got enough time. Got married on a Saturday afternoon in April of 1980. Had a bachelor party the night before my wedding. None of the guys at the bachelor party are getting married the next day. All of them have sense enough to go home at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm still at my bachelor till 7:30 in the morning, right, me and my brothers. Take me home at 7:30, pour me in bed at 10 o'clock for my 1 o'clock wedding, I'm tore up. I'm tore up. Pour me in bed at 7:30. Get me up at 10 o'clock for my 1 o'clock wedding, I'm tore up. I'm supposed to say my own vows at this wedding. And apparently, when I showed up at the wedding, I'm staggering and I'm stumbling, and it's so severe that my then wife to be took one look at that, and she looked at the preacher and said, "Okay, scratch the on vow, say the regular on him, right?" So now my lines are cut to two ways. We get into the ceremony, he gets to me, I get ready to say, I said, and threw up all over. Passed out. Have not taken a wedding picture to this day. Pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. New friends, if you're anything like me, want to hit the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, although the words you guys use in the room are not unfamiliar to me, the way you guys use them is not the way I use them in my everyday vocabulary. I needed some help. You guys were talking about a psychic change and this phenomenon of craving and this allergy to the body. And the way you guys use each one of those terms, I needed some help with. But the first time I heard pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization, didn't need no help with that one. Folk like us don't need a dictionary for pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization. I lived pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization up close and personal. And I lived it over and over and over and over again. See, I'm the kind of father and I'm the kind of husband. Remember sitting on my living room couch, wife coming out the bathroom real fast, pulling her pants up, go to the dining room table, pick her purse up off that table, clutch it real close as she went back to the bathroom. I feel as tall because nobody was in the house but me and her. Got like that in my house. I'm the kind of father and I'm the kind of husband. Remember coming home, sticking my key in the door. Wife and two-year-old daughter sitting here and they both crying. I look over here and homeboy sitting in my seat. He's got a gun pointed at my stomach. Talking about I want my money right now. Fellas, let me holler at you guys for just a minute. Don't know about the rest of you. But I always had a lot of fears and a lot of doubts about do I have what it takes to be a father? Do I have what it takes to be a husband? Because if you're in the life, your track record already gives you your answer, right? Because what's the father's role and what's the husband's role? To protect and to provide, and it's a cold-blooded feeling, fellas. Laying in bed with a woman night after night after night after night. Knowing not only aren't you protecting. Knowing not only aren't you providing. You're the one bringing the wolf to the door. See, I'm the kind of father and I'm the kind of husband. Remember sitting on my back porch. Two-year-old daughter coming outside pulling in my coat. Daddy, daddy, that's my piggy bank. I remember stopping and giving her a little grin. Don't worry, baby. Daddy's going to put some dollar bills in here for this change. And I wasn't ready to be stealing from my daughter. I wasn't ready to be stealing from my wife. I was alcoholic with no tools of recovery, and I did what it took to get what I needed to get. Share with you that my disease is progressive in nature, and in my experience, it's progressive in a couple of areas. Share one area already. It takes more than it used to take in order for me to get the same effect. But my disease is progressive in another area, my behavior. My behavior gets progressively worse. I'm willing to do more readily, chase this thing. First time I hit my wife's purse, if you would hook me up to a poly, I would have passed when I told you. I'm not stealing this money. I'm going to replace this $40 before she knows it's missing. Minute with everything in me because I don't steal. Took that $40, went and spent it up, came back looking for some more money. She had moved a purse. I didn't look for it. I couldn't believe I'd hit the purse like that. Couldn't believe it. Our co-founder started writing this book in 1937, published it in 1939. I hit the earth sometime after that, and I hit you guys sometime later than that. Always blows me away that they put me in that book. Put me in that book. 2 weeks after I said I'm going to replace this money before she knows it's missing, same scenario presented. I'm out doing what I do, and the thought came. You know, that book describes me to a T. We don't know why. Sometimes alcoholic can be unable to recall with sufficient force. Pain, suffering, humiliation, weeks, even days ago. Didn't even think about it. I said, last time I took 40 and she moved the purse. This time I'll take all the money out. And that I don't spend up, I'll sneak it back in the purse. Off and running to hit my wife's purse on a regular. Did that one too many times. Came home one morning. Screen door was locked. Note on the screen. Rest of your stuff is at your mama's house. I'm put out of my house. I'm now my daddy. Over the course of the next year, my five brothers got put out their respective homes. All of us ended up at my mama's house and we damn near killed her. When I got put out of my house and went to stay at my mom's house, my ex-wife, my wife still at the time thought it was something salvageable about this piece of man she married. And she would bring my daughter over on Saturday so we could keep a father-daughter relationship. And I wanted to be a father to my little girl with everything in me. I really, really, really did. I wanted to take my girl to Disneyland, and I wanted to take her to Magic Mountain. I wanted to take her to a movie on a Saturday afternoon. I wanted to walk up the street with her little hand in my big hand, take her to the store and buy some ice cream. I wanted to sit her in my lap and read stories to her. I wanted to tuck her in bed at night and get a good night kiss. I wanted to get the look from my little girl that I've seen men in the fellowship get, to look like this is my daddy and this is my hero. And the best I could do on those Saturdays was 30 minutes. 30 minutes. Tell my mom something like I'm going to the store to buy a raisin of ice cream, I disappeared. Sneak back on Sunday night when her mom was coming to get her. Can still remember some of them long Sunday nights, sticking my head around the side of my mom's house, tears flowing. And through the tears, I see those two heads in the car and those headlights backing out the driveway. And I'd be thinking to myself, there goes my life, backing out this driveway. I've heard a lot of people share that they were scared of dying out there. Not my story. Never scared of dying. Scared I was going to keep waking up to the same old thing. Monday, the same as Tuesday, the same as Sunday, the same as Christmas, over and over and over again. And I'm so glad God don't make misery comfortable. And on October 11, 1986, I got miserable enough. I got tired enough. I got directed to the fourth program of recovery. I went to the Harbor Light Center on Skid Row in downtown Los Angeles. And on October 3rd, the first weekend after I was in the light, they brought a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous into the facility. That October in 1986, I was in a real dark place and I was in a real bad way. I was full of remorse and I was full of regret. I was full of I'll never be able to forgive myself for what I had done and what I had become. They had a speaker at the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous that night standing in front of the group, somewhat like I am tonight. And he was sharing about taking from the job, and he was sharing about taking from the family. And I remember looking at him and thinking to myself, yeah, you sharing about doing scandalous things, but you look scandalous. You should have been doing that. I'm different. Y'all ain't going to hear my business. Speaker seemed like he knew I was in the room. He read my mail. He dropped something on me like this. He said, if you're sitting in this room right now, you are not responsible for your disease, but you are responsible for your recovery. And you have just now tapped into a source of power much greater than yourself. And you don't have to drink and you don't have to use no matter what, provided you are willing to fulfill some conditions. That speaker that night caught my attention. He went on to say, this is the only club you can be a member of where the worse off you are when you get here, better off your chances of staying. And I got the message of hope from the first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous they took me to. Dude described for me what we suffer from, and he did it in a real, real strange way. I've never seen anything like it. I still never see anything like it. Dude was talking about me, talking about himself. Learned some anatomical facts about a guy named Ralph. I learned that when I was out there, I learned that when my ass is raw, my ears open and my mouth closes. When my behind starts healing, my mouth starts running and my ears start closing. Thank God I was tenderized well enough this last time I heard the music when I got back to the room. And I was sitting in the front of the room, man, and I was listening. Because those previous attempts, I was one of the guys, you know, I see you. I was one of the ones, you know, yeah, okay, you know, yeah, right, Mr. Speaker, you know. But I was sitting up, man, and I was taking it personal in a real good way. Dude seemed like he was talking directly to me. He said it's something physically different about me and seemed like he invited me to diagnose myself. Ralph, don't take my word for it. How many times did you say, I'm just going to spend 20? What happened? Whole paycheck. How many times did you say, I'm just going to stop off at happy hour for a minute? What happened? Whole paycheck. How many times did you just say, okay, I'm going to stop up over here at my boy John's house for a minute? What happened? Whole paycheck. Ralph, did it happen once? Did it happen twice? If your name is Ralph from 1979 to 1985, every 2 weeks, whole paycheck. My experience, not yours, not yours, not the oldest, old timer, not my sponsors. My experience abundantly confirms for me when I take one of anything, no matter where I have to go, what I have to do, who I have to see, no matter how great the wish or the necessity, my body takes over and I have to have another. Okay, smart guy, just my body. How do you explain stone sober My car seemed to drive to the LIQ on payday. Second part is disease, the obsession that somehow, someday, I will be able to control and enjoy this magic potion. Somebody help me with that. Where is this control and enjoy factor coming from anyway? Check this out. Anytime I was controlling, I wasn't enjoying. Anytime I was enjoying, I damn sure wasn't controlling. Why am I stuck on control and enjoy? I can't drink because of my body. I cannot. My mind refuses to accept that fact. I'm powerless. Third part is disease, spiritual malady. 12 and 12 describes it as a soul sickness. And in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, it says, Ralph, if you work on the spiritual, the mental and the physical are straightened out. That's what we do. Don't get scared. Damn. I feel you, Mr. Speaker, but you're getting ready to lose me right here. Already, I kind of like that worse off you are when you get. I liked all that, but you're getting ready to hit me with the G word. I'm not feeling that. You can call it universal intelligence. You can call it creative. And, you know, you can call it all those other words. But I know what you're talking about. And that ain't what I came here for. Yeah, Mr. Speaker, with your 31 years, that God word just slides out your mouth. You ain't feeling me. Check this out. I did not come up in here walking toward the light. I came up in here running from the fire. And if your ass is on fire, you know, this is the place for you to be too. Did not know what I was looking for when I came up in here. Didn't know I was looking for power. Didn't know that I was looking for a power to live. Didn't know I was get to stand up as a grown man in my own life. I just wanted to get it off me. I just wanted to get it off me. I didn't know what I was in for when I came up in here. You know, just wanted to get it off. Now, I'm not knocking physical sobriety. You could just want to get it off you, too. If you just don't drink and you just don't use, you might make it home with a whole paycheck. If you just don't drink and you just don't use, you might stop going to jail on the weekends. If you just don't drink and you just don't use, you might make it to work on Monday morning. But what this program has to offer is a whole lot more than that. What this program is really about is about obtaining and maintaining access to a source of power that can do for me what I can't do for myself. What this program is really about is about obtaining and maintaining access to a source of power that can do anything but fail. What this program is really about, let's take a selfie. You want to see Alcoholics Anonymous? You know, in this incident, everybody want to see everything. What this program is really about, take a look around the room. What this program is really about is about taking people like us, drunks and boosters and convicts and con artists, strawberries, tricks, failures as parents, failures as kids, broken down pieces of men and women who don't have dreams and goals and hopes anymore. This program takes people like us and it sticks us together in one room, and I stick one hand in your hand and the other hand in God's hand, and we pick up our ass and we walk out of these rooms as mothers and fathers and sisters and brothers, sons, daughters, employees, role models in our community. This program is about growth. This program is about change. If it's going to be any change that's made in my life, it begins and it ends with me. You know, I'm going fast because we got a long way to go and a short time to get there, and I ain't going to keep you, but I just feel like talking about this thing that you guys gave me, you know. And you know, I had an opportunity to do a lot of talking about it at that workshop, man. I had an opportunity to talk a lot about the gratitude I feel for being in your company. You know, with Leslie and I were talking, you know, if those two men, you know, somebody in here is sitting in the middle of something that feels real dark right now. Somebody is into sitting in something that feel like, God, I just can't walk through this one. You know, and I always am mindful, you know, of what it is that we have, this thing of ours. And I get grateful all over again. You don't get Ralph White out because I'm the one that's going to try to scare you in the recovery. I'm not trying to browbeat you in the recovery. That ain't my thing. If you go back out there still getting, you know, and what I used to think of as my heyday, people used to look at the way I was getting down and be like, damn, man, ain't you scared of overdose? I'd be like, scared of overdose? I'm scared of the deadly underdose. You better put some more up on here. You know, so the message of fear ain't the message that'll hold a guy of my variety. The message that'll hold a guy like me is a message that's got to have depth. The book talks about a message that's got to have depth and that's got to have weight. The message tonight, Speaker, brings to you that's got the most depth and the most weight. You're looking at a guy who at 33 years old and giving up on life. You're looking at a guy who at 33 years old did not know where his little girl was enrolled in school and didn't know where his family was living. You're looking at a guy who at 33 years old had not answered anybody's 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock wake-up call to go to work in so long I no longer thought I was employable. You're looking at a guy who came from a major university in this country, and my job at the end was taking the trash out for a 21-year-old. I was sleeping in the back of my mother's garage, and I was eating lemons off a neighbor's lemon tree for breakfast. And the men and women in this fellowship met me in that condition. And you loved me, and you nursed me back to health. You gave me a way out upon which we all, you know, we can all agree. And you gave me something, man. You gave me something. And I'm one of the ones, man, I stay grateful. I'm still grateful. All these many years later, I'm still grateful. You know, I got my feet put on a path to really go somewhere. You know, and sometimes I can't help but think about what it is. You see me. You see me. Sometimes I just think about it. You know, I talked about it before. You know, we in that workshop, we talked about a couple of things, you know, and we talked about a couple of things in the workshop, you know, and one of the things that, you know, see those traditions right there, if you knew, you know, those traditions right there, we got a third tradition, and that third tradition is the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. Broad, you know, that's a broad, you know, umbrella. I got a desire to stop drinking. Check this out. I'm on the team. Can't nobody put you off. Can't nobody put you off. I'm on the team. That's wonderful news, right? That's big. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. No other ones. Not no money, not no status, not no none of them. Only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. But check this out. Everybody that's on the team ain't in the game. Put me in the goddamn game. Put me in the game. Put me in the game. I ain't never been a guy. I'm not knocking. We need fans. We need spectators. We need bench warmers. You know. I ain't mad. We need all that. We even need people who commentate on the game and think that puts them in the game. You know, that's all right. We need all that. But put me in the game. I've always been a guy. Why be in a 12-step program and not be practicing the 12-step? I never sat up in a spot and saw you taking a hit or tell you taking a drink and thought I was going to end up loaded. No, I'm not going to see you taking steps and think I'm going to end up recovered. I got to get it for myself. I'm that kind of guy. I don't even go to strip clubs because I don't like looking. I got to be in. Put me in the game. You know, I'm an all-in guy. I'm not scared. You know, and as a result of that, man, remarkable things have happened in my life. I'm an all-in guy. You know, and that's, I can't believe, and I'm all-in for this deal because it's been all-in for me. I'm all-in for it because it's been all-in for me. Me and Les was rolling, I was thinking, if that dude, just check this out. December 1934, Bill Wilson went to Towns Hospital, and something phenomenal happened to him while he was in the hospital. So amazing that when he shared it with the doctor the next morning, the doctor, here's where the hand of God is evident in hindsight. When you're in it, when you're in the middle of being a miracle, you don't know that's what's happening to you. You just think, oh, I'm in my life. And then you look back, damn. Miracle, I ain't took one. And when Bill Wilson was in there, but something amazing happened to him. And when he recounted it to the doctor from the outside looking in said, dude, I don't know what you got, what happened to you, but you would look good holding on to it. And he left. He left the hospital and he set about looking for people. 6 months stayed sober, nobody else got sober. Right? And in that period of time, some people put together a business opportunity for him, said, we want you to represent our business out of town. He traveled to Akron, Ohio, and his business didn't come off too well. Put that on the board. Let's mark that. His business didn't come off too well. Somebody is in the middle of some business not coming off too well. Feel like the worst day in the world. I know that felt like his worst. Why am I even keep doing this sober thing? I knew not to get my hopes up, but he didn't say all that. A thought came, and he said yes to the idea of finding a drunk to work with. Thank you, Bill Wilson. We collectively, as an organization, as a fellowship, as a society, we stood at the turning point with him. Find a drunk, take a drink. Find a drunk, take. He said yes to the idea of finding a drunk. And through a series of divine coincidences, he got put in touch with a lady who had a husband like us. Talked to Ann Smith. Dr. Bob was passed out. He said, I understand you got a husband with a drinking problem. I'd like to holler at him. You see, and Dr. Bob said, I'd give a dude 15 minutes tomorrow. They met the next day. That 15 minutes turned into about 4.5 hours. And they set about looking for people like me and you. And I'm so grateful that they set about looking for people. I'm so grateful his business didn't come off. What if his business would have been successful? Dr. Bob Smith wouldn't have got sober. Might have got sober sometime. We don't know. What if his business didn't come off? He might have got fat with his money and went about his business, and he might not even stay sober. This I know for a fact. What if his business would have came off all right? What if his business would have came all right? All right. I always think I know what's best for me. Thank God, God is God, and he got a plan. And his business did not turn out all right for him, and it turned out all right for us. If it wasn't for you guys, the planet would not know a little girl named River White. If it wasn't for you, I can't even believe it sometimes. the planet, this world, would not get to enjoy a hell of a young lady named Rain White. There would be no artist Reed Gravelli, my grandson, if the business had come off all right. If I hadn't come to you guys and got full heart, goddamn right, put me in the game. Why get in the game, Ralph? You, because I'm standing up as a grown. Life does what it is that it does. And without you guys, I never would have been searching fearlessly for what it is I'm looking for. I didn't know I was looking for power. I didn't know I was looking for the power by which I could live. I didn't know that's what it was that was going to happen for me. I didn't know that I was going to stand up in front of you. And I'm not just standing up in front of you as Ralph White. I didn't know as a result of you putting his ass back together and his brothers back together that my mom is 88 years old. I didn't know the ripples. I didn't know that. I didn't know that every time I go to a meeting, me and you, every time I go to a meeting, me and you, we're doing it right now. I get to participate in some little boy or some little girl getting ready to have mama come back. Every time I go to a meeting, we're doing it right now, me and you. I get to participate in some family getting ready to have daddy come home. Every time I go to a meeting, we're doing it right now, me and you. I get to participate in some man or some woman getting ready to have a hell of a maiden in their life. Every time I go to a meeting, me and you, we're doing it right now. I get to participate in some employer that I don't know and could care less about. You may have a hell of an employee enter the workplace. Who wouldn't want to be part of a fellowship like that? I've always wanted to do something important. I've always wanted to do something significant. I can think of nothing more important and I can think of nothing more significant than being a participating member of the life-saving, life-changing experience that is Alcoholics Anonymous. Whenever anybody, anywhere reaches out for help, I want the hand of aid to be there, and for that I'm responsible and I take it very serious. You'll never hear Ralph White say, "I don't know why I'm sober. I know exactly why I'm sober. I get a blessing so that I can be a blessing." Recovery for me is a gift from God. What I do with my recovery, it's my gift to God. My name is Ralph White. I am an alcoholic.